and welcome on to NBA Recap. Today is Friday, April 22nd, and we had three games on in the NBA last night, so let's get right into them. Starting off in Minnesota, the 2-7 matchup in the Western Conference, and the Grizzlies took a 2-1 series lead, defeating the Timberwolves 104-95. In Utah, the 4-5 matchup in the Western Conference, the Mavericks took a 2-1 series lead, defeating the Jazz in their home barn 126-118. And finally, in Denver, the 3-6 matchup in the Western Conference, the Warriors took a commanding 3-0 series lead, defeating the Nuggets 118-113. So we will break down all three of those games in just a moment. But first, if you'd like to follow the show on social, we are at NBA Recap Pod, or you can just search YouTube or smart speakers for NBA Recap Podcast. And if you enjoy the show, consider subscribing or leaving a review. It really helps get the word out. All right, so starting off today in Minneapolis, Minnesota, where the Timberwolves were defeated by the Memphis Grizzlies 104-95. The Grizzlies were led by the sophomore Desmond Bane. He had 26 points, and they also got 20 off the bench from the backup big man Brandon Clark, and a triple-double from Ja Morant, 16 points, 10 rebounds, and 10 assists. Whereas the Timberwolves were led by D'Angelo Russell, he had 22 points, and then they also got 19 from Anthony Edwards, and a double-double from Jared Vanderbilt, 10 points and 13 rebounds. But this was a really disappointing performance from the Timberwolves and from Karl-Anthony Towns. In 33 minutes, Towns just ended up with 8 points. He was 3 of 4 from the field. He had 4 turnovers and 5 fouls. Really disappointing stuff from Cat. And then I mentioned that Russell and Edwards were the leading scorers, but they weren't super efficient. Russell was 9 of 21 from the field. Edwards was 6 of 13 from the field. And then Patrick Beverley was 5 of 13. Malik Beasley off the bench was 4 of 12. So the shooting was really disappointing for Minnesota. But despite all that, they were actually dominating this game early on. They had outscored the Grizzlies in the first quarter 39-21. At one point at the beginning of the second quarter, they were crushing the Grizzlies. They were up 47-21 after a three-pointer from Malik Beasley with 10:28 left on the clock. It was a 26-point advantage at that point, but they totally squandered it. So it was pretty much right then when they started to struggle. They only managed to score 4 more points in the entire second quarter after that three-pointer from Malik Beasley. They ended up with just 51 points, despite having 47 points like 2 minutes into the second quarter. So they allowed the Grizzlies to cut the deficit all the way to within double digits. By halftime, it was 51-44. So they had already made up a huge deficit. But then the Timberwolves actually re-extended the lead in the third quarter. This was just like the most streaky performance I can think of. They got up huge early, gave it all back in the second quarter, but then re-extended the lead in the third. So after a layup from D'Angelo Russell with 3:10 on the clock in the third quarter, they were up 79-54. So just like that, they re-extended that lead all the way to 25 points. This team is like so talented, they can go on these offensive explosions and build up a 25-point lead just like that. But then, once again, they totally squandered the lead again. So this time it was at the end of the third, but really the beginning of the fourth when they started to fall apart again. Their offense once again just totally stagnated. In fact, I said it was the beginning of the fourth quarter. Really, it was the entire fourth quarter. They only managed to score 12 points in the fourth, whereas the Memphis Grizzlies, 37 points. So they caught absolute fire in the final period when the Timberwolves completely fell apart. Total capitulation for the Timberwolves twice, really. It was at the end of the second and then the fourth quarter as well. In fact, they actually scored 12 points in the second quarter as well. So surprise, surprise, being absolutely dreadful in two of the four quarters of an NBA game will lead you to lose quite handily. And the Grizzlies, in the end, built up a 9-point lead by the end of the fourth quarter. They just quickly erased that deficit at the beginning of the fourth, took the lead, and then continued to cruise ahead. There was some nice buckets from Brandon Clark down the stretch in the fourth quarter. He was really clutch in this game. And then they also got a big three-pointer from Dylan Brooks with 1:17 left on the clock that extended the lead to 10. It was 102-92. And then Ja Morant also got a clutch layup with 50 seconds to go. And then at the very end of the game, Anthony Edwards got a three-pointer, but it was basically garbage time at that point. There was no time left. So really emphatic victory for the Grizzlies after being down by like at least 25 points multiple times throughout this game. In the end, the Grizzlies were 42% from the field, 37% from three. Now, they did have 18 turnovers. They obviously prevailed in the fourth quarter, but they were not exactly playing the best ball themselves earlier in the game, allowing the Timberwolves to build up that initial lead in the first place. 18 turnovers is way too sloppy in terms of the ball handling, although they did at least have the edge in terms of the rebounding. They out-rebounded the Timberwolves 48-41, despite the fact that there was no Steven Adams in the lineup at all for the Grizzlies. He only ended up playing 3 minutes in their last game before getting yanked and never returning to the court. And then in this game, he was a DNPCD. Kyle Anderson actually got the start, and then Brandon Clark got the lion's share of the big man minutes off the bench. He played 29 minutes in the end, and he was really solid. So interesting that Taylor Jenkins has decided to just remove Steven Adams entirely from the lineup here in the first round of the playoffs after being nominally the starting big man for the entire season. But it worked in the end, so credit to the Grizzlies. The Timberwolves, on the other hand, shot 38% from the field and 34% from three. They were obviously much better than that earlier in the game, but that fourth quarter just totally tanked all of their percentages. They ended up having 17 turnovers, nearly matching the Grizzlies. So while they could have taken advantage of that sloppy ball handling from Memphis, instead, they just basically matched them turnover for turnover. So really disappointing stuff for the Timberwolves here. Charles Barkley on Inside the NBA after the game was just saying how stupid of a team the Timberwolves are, and I think his point was that they're such a talented team. They've got one of the most dominant scoring big men of all time in Karl-Anthony Towns, and then they've got this young supernova in Anthony Edwards, who is athletically as gifted as they come, but they can just never seem to get over that hump. Karl Towns only attempting 4 shots in this game is shocking. Granted, he was in foul trouble, but still, when you're supposed to be the leader of the team, the best player on the team, perhaps even the best player on the court, and as he himself has claimed, one of the best scoring big men of all time, you have got to be inserting yourself, dominating, taking control of the game. Only taking 4 shots is abysmal. Allowing Jaden McDaniels and Naz Reid and Jared Vanderbilt and basically all of the other guys on the roster except for Torian Prince and Greg Monroe, who saw the court briefly, to take more shots than you is completely inexcusable. So really disappointing stuff, like I said, for the Timberwolves to lose this game. Yeah, they're only down 2-1, but it seems like the momentum is definitely shifting big time towards the Memphis Grizzlies. I would not be surprised at all if they won the next game in Minnesota as well, and then actually closed this series out 4-1 in Memphis. That seems like where it's headed at this point, because the Grizzlies were so good all season long, whereas the Timberwolves are kind of falling apart at just the wrong time. All right, so anyways, we can move on now to the box score, and the Grizzlies were led, as I mentioned, by Desmond Bane, the sophomore shooting guard. He had 26 points in 40 minutes. He was 8 of 19 from the field, but 7 of 15 from 3, so really getting it done from beyond the arc. He had 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. He was plus 14 in the plus-minus. The team high in that regard was actually Ja Morant, his partner in the backcourt. He was plus 20 in his 41 minutes, and he had 16 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, 1 steal, and 3 blocks. So those numbers are all really encouraging for Morant. However, his shooting and ball handling were suspect, to say the least. He was 5 of 18 from the field, 5 of 10 from the free throw line, and then he had 7 turnovers. So all of that is a bit concerning for Morant, but nonetheless, he still was able to produce at a pretty high level throughout the box score otherwise. And then they also got 11 points from Dylan Brooks, although he was not super efficient either. 4 of 14, and he had 4 rebounds, 2 assists. 4 points for Kyle Anderson, inserted into the starting lineup, basically in place of Steven Adams, going with a bit of a smaller lineup here, the Grizzlies, with Jaren Jackson as the solo traditional big man. Anderson was 2 of 3 from the field. He had 3 rebounds, 3 assists. And then 6 points for Jackson Jr. He was only 2 of 6 from the field, though, in 21 minutes. He had 7 rebounds, 2 steals, and 2 blocks, but 5 fouls. So a lot of these starters for the Grizzlies getting in foul trouble, turning the ball over, not shooting the ball very efficiently. So the fact that they were able to pull this game out in the end is really a testament to some of the guys, especially off the bench. Brandon Clark was really solid. He led the bench in scoring. He had 20 points, 8 rebounds, 1 block in 29 minutes, and he was very efficient. 6 of 9 from the field, 8 of 8 from the free throw line. He had 0 turnovers and 0 fouls. Really good stuff for Clark. And then they also got 11 points from Tyus Jones, the backup point guard, and he was very efficient as well. 4 of 6 from the field, 3 of 3 from beyond the arc in 14 minutes. And he also had 5 rebounds, 4 assists. And then 5 points for the other backup big man, Xavier Tillman, and he was also perfect 2 of 2 from the field, and 5 points as well for the rookie, Zaire Williams, in 7 minutes. De'Anthony Melton was 0 of 2 from the field in 7 minutes. And as for the Minnesota Timberwolves, they were led, as I mentioned, by D'Angelo Russell. He had 22 points in 39 minutes. He was 9 of 21 from the field. He was at least 4 of 8 from the three-point line, though, but he didn't get to the free throw line at all. And then he also had 5 rebounds, 8 assists, and 1 steal. 14 points for Patrick Beverley, his partner in the backcourt. He was 5 of 13 from the field, 0 of 5 from 3, and he had 2 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks, so at least stuffing the stat sheet in terms of the defensive categories, Beverly. They got 19 points from Anthony Edwards, the sophomore. He was 6 of 13 from the field, 4 of 9 from 3, but he was 3 of 6 from the free throw line. He had 7 rebounds, 2 assists, and 1 steal. And then they got a double-double from Jared Vanderbilt, 10 points, 13 rebounds, with 2 assists, 3 steals, but he was 2 of 8 from the field. And then Karl Anthony Towns, the fewest shot attempts of the starters, he was 3 of 4 from the field for 8 points. He had 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 5 blocks, but also, like I said, 4 turnovers and 5 fouls. And off the bench for Minnesota, they got 11 points from Malik Beasley, but he was not very good either. 4 of 12 from the field. He had 3 rebounds, 2 3-pointers. He was the team low by far in plus-minus, negative 21. And then just 3 points for the backup big man, Naz Reid. He was 1 of 5 from the field. 8 points for Jaden McDaniels. He had 2 3-pointers, 2 rebounds. And that was it in terms of the scoring off the bench for Minnesota. Greg Monroe and Torian Prince saw the court briefly, like I said, but neither of them scored. All right, next up we can move on to Salt Lake City, where the Jazz were defeated by the Luka Doncic-less Mavericks, 126-118. The Mavs now restore order, taking a 2-1 series lead, and like the previous matchup, I could potentially see this one being over in a hurry. Despite their best player not playing in any of these games, the Mavericks have a pretty good chance of closing this series out, because the Jazz are just falling apart. This core of Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, and Quinn Snyder at head coach, it's just falling apart. It's not working. Everybody can see it. I don't know if it was Joe Ingles holding everything together or what, but they have just been falling apart ever since his injury and subsequent trade from the team. Or maybe it's the upheaval in the front office. They've got a new owner in Ryan Smith. He's one of the youngest and now wealthiest owners in the NBA. They've also got a couple of big figures in the front office now in Danny Ainge and Dwayne Wade. So I don't know if their influence is having an impact on the situation with the Jazz. And then there's always been rumors about the relationship between Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, that they're not friends necessarily, and there's always these pieces pushing back. You don't have to be friends to be a good team. And that might be true, but it certainly doesn't help matters when your team chemistry is in question and your two best players don't necessarily like each other very much. So I don't know what it is about this team. There's a lot of things that could be contributing to this situation that the Jazz currently find themselves in. And I guess it's possible that they could rally, win game 4, tie the series up 2-2. Maybe Luka won't play in that one. And then, I mean, they've only got to win 2 more games at that point. So I'm not going to count them out completely from this series, because obviously this team is banged up, the Dallas Mavericks with no Luka, but still, things do not look great at the moment for the Utah Jazz. So let's get into this actual game. The Mavericks were led once again by Jalen Brunson. He's been incredible in Luka Doncic's absence. He had 31 points in this game. He was 12 of 22 from the field, 7 of 7 from the free throw line. And then they also got 20 points from Spencer Dinwiddie and 17 points off the bench from Maxi Kleba. Kleba has just been on fire in the playoffs. He was 4 of 5 from beyond the arc once again, and then they also got 4 three-pointers from Davis Bertans. Whereas the Jazz were led by Donovan Mitchell. He had 32 points, and then they also got 24 from Bojan Bogdanović and 21 from Mike Conley. And the Mavericks were actually controlling this game throughout the majority of regulation. They had outscored the Jazz 27-20 in the first, and then 41-31 in the second. So they were leading by a pretty significant margin at the half. It was like a 17-point advantage, and they were able to maintain that lead throughout a lot of the third quarter as well. But slowly but surely, the Jazz started to chip away at that lead, and by the end of the third, they had got it to within double digits. In fact, it was just a 6-point game. It was 97-91 heading into the fourth quarter after the Jazz had outscored the Mavericks 40-29 overall in the third quarter. And then they actually cut it to within 1 point at one point midway through the fourth quarter. Mike Conley hit a 3-pointer, and it was 102-103. That was as close as they would get, 1 point, with 6:42 left on the clock in the fourth. Because then the Mavericks reestablished control of this game. Jalen Brunson and Spencer Dinwiddie were knocking down shots, and they were pretty quickly able to build up an 8 or 9 point lead and hold on to that throughout the rest of the game. The most clutch shot of the game came with 1:25 left on the clock. The Mavs were up by 7 at that point. They had the ball, and Spencer Dinwiddie knocks down a dagger 3-pointer off of a Dorian Finney-Smith assist. which re-extended the lead for the Mavs to 10 points. It was 119 to 109 at that point. And like I said, that was kind of the nail in the coffin. There was still time left, but the Jazz were just deflated after successfully coming all the way back at the end of the third, beginning of the fourth, but then allowing the Mavericks to just re-extend that lead. It really just killed the Jazz. And so they ultimately lost this game, and they shot the ball pretty well despite that. They were 56% from the field, but they were 32% from three. The Mavericks, they were 49% from the field, 42% from three. That was the big difference maker in this one. The three-point shooting was incredible for the Mavericks. And then, once again, another big advantage that they had was the ball handling. The turnovers, very low for the Mavericks for the second game in a row. Just 9 turnovers, whereas the Jazz had 14. Jalen Brunson had just 1 turnover after having 0 turnovers in their last game. He is just a master ball handler. He just doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't turn the ball over like Luka Doncic or Steph Curry do. Some of the best players in the game can get a little cavalier with the passes that they throw, but Brunson just very steady. He had 5 assists, and it'll be really interesting to see what happens with him in the offseason with his contract situation looming. The Mavericks would obviously like to retain him, but he's an unrestricted free agent, so there's going to be plenty of suitors for Brunson after this playoff run that he's having. All right, so we can move on now to the box score, and the Mavs were led by Brunson, like I said, 31 points in 35 minutes. He was 12 of 22 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3, but 7 of 7 from the free throw line, and he had 1 rebound, 5 assists, and just the 1 turnover. Really good stuff for Brunson. And then his partner in the backcourt, Spencer Dinwiddie, had 20 points, and he was not very efficient, 6 of 21 from the field, but he had 2 threes, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals. And he did actually foul out at this game. He was plus 8 in the plus minus, though. And then they got 14 points from Dorian Finney-Smith. He was 6 of 12 from the field. He had 8 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 steals. 12 points for Reggie Bullock. He was 3 of 6 from beyond the arc. That's all he took, were those 6 three-pointers. And he also had 6 rebounds and 3 assists. And then Dwight Powell, rounding out the starting lineup, did not score at all. He just played 13 minutes before going out of this game. He had 4 rebounds in that time. And off the bench for the Mavs, they got 17 points from the backup big man, Maxi Kleba. Like I said, he has been on fire, especially from beyond the arc in these playoffs. He was 6 of 7 from the field overall, 4 of 5 from 3, and he had 3 rebounds, 2 assists. And then they also got 15 points from Davis Bertans. He was also on fire, 4 of 7 from beyond the arc, and he had 2 rebounds. And then 12 points from Josh Green, the Australian. He was 4 of 6 from the field in 19 minutes. He was also on fire, 3 of 5 from beyond the arc, and he had 6 assists, 3 rebounds, 2 steals. Really solid production from Green. And then 3 points for Trey Burke in 4 minutes, and 2 points from Sterling Brown. Whereas the Jazz were led by Donovan Mitchell, he had 32 points in 39 minutes, and he wasn't inefficient. He was 10 of 21 from the field, 11 of 12 from the free throw line, although he was 1 of 8 from 3, and he had 4 fouls, 2 turnovers, but he also had 2 rebounds, 6 assists, and 1 block. So not a terrible game for Mitchell. And then they also got 21 points from Mike Conley. He was a little bit inefficient, 6 of 14 from the field, but he had 2 three-pointers, 2 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and a block. And then they also got 24 points from Bojan Bogdanović. He was 8 of 12 from the field, 4 of 7 from 3, so probably the most efficient out of those three. And he had 6 rebounds, 2 assists. And then Rudy Gobert was actually perfect, 6 of 6 from the field. He had 15.7 rebounds and 2 points only for Royce O'Neal, rounding out the starting lineup in 32 minutes. He did not attempt a shot at all. And off the bench for the Jazz, they got 14 points from Jordan Clarkson. In 30 minutes, he was 5 of 9 from the field. They also got 6 points from Eric Paschal in 10 minutes, and 2 points from Daniel House, and 2 points from Hassan Whiteside. Juancho Hernan Gomez did not score in his 6 minutes. All right, and finally, we can move on to Denver, where the Nuggets were defeated by the Golden State Warriors, 118 to 113. The Warriors now have a commanding 3-0 series lead, and they could potentially close this series out in Game 4. I said in our preview of this game yesterday that I didn't think the Nuggets would get swept. They would either win this one or Game 4, but at this point, I'm not so sure. The Warriors just look so dominant right now. There's just nothing you can do when you've got 3 guys who are absolute sharpshooters from long distance. So they were led in this game by Steph Curry once again. He had 27 points, still coming off the bench, although he played 31 minutes. He will almost certainly be reinserted into the starting lineup at some point soon. And then they also got 27 points from Jordan Poole and 26 points from Klay Thompson. It is just absolutely remarkable that the Warriors have been able to uncover another player in Jordan Poole who can hang with Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. They are two of the greatest shooters in NBA history, and Poole is just going right along with them, scoring 27 points, knocking down 3 3-pointers. He was 9 of 13 from the field in this game. He was the most efficient of the three. It is just truly, truly remarkable that they've got yet another knockdown shooter to go along with the Splash Brothers, Thompson and Curry. Poole is definitely an honorary member at this point. There's been a lot of talk about what this new death lineup, quote unquote, is called. I would go with the Poole Party just because it is indicative of the key new member, Jordan Poole, and it also works with the Splash Brothers. But anyways, the Denver Nuggets, for their part, were led by the reigning MVP, Nikola Jokic, and he was incredible. He had 37 points and 18 rebounds, and he was incredibly efficient too, 14 of 22 from the field. And then they also got a double-double from Aaron Gordon, 18 points, 12 rebounds, and 13 points from Will Barton. But unfortunately for the Nuggets, this team, with no Jamal Murray and no Michael Porter Jr., just do not have the top-end talent to contend with a juggernaut like the Golden State Warriors. They are just really falling apart right now. And it's not their fault. I mean, when you have Will Barton and Monty Morris and Jeff Green in your starting lineup in the playoffs, it's just not a good sign. And so hopefully for the Nuggets' sake, they can avoid a sweep, maybe win game four. And then once they eventually do lose this series, they can get totally recovered in the offseason and come back stronger than ever with Murray and Porter Jr. and Jokic and Aaron Gordon all firing on all cylinders in the starting lineup, and they are going to be a really talented team going forwards if they can just stay healthy. But this was actually a pretty close game, despite all of what I was just saying. The Nuggets were in it throughout. They were actually trailing in the second quarter. At one point, it was a double-digit lead for the Warriors with 4 minutes to go after some free throws from Andrew Wiggins. It was 61-49, but then the Warriors were a little sluggish coming out of halftime, and the Nuggets were able to tie the game up, and then basically it was back and forth from there on out. It was really close throughout the third and fourth quarter. Neither team ever held more than about a 5-point lead in the entire fourth quarter until the very end of the game, when the Nuggets just could not make anything happen in the final, like, 2 minutes of this game. In fact, down the stretch, it was all Jordan Poole and Steph Curry. So with 2:15 left on the clock, the Warriors took a 3-point lead off of a 2-pointer from Jordan Poole. It was 114-111 at that point. And then Steph Curry followed that up about a minute later with a layup. That was with 40 seconds to go, and that put the Warriors up by 5, 116-111. And then it was free throws from there on out from Jordan Poole and Steph Curry that helped secure the victory for Golden State. So an unfortunate loss for the Nuggets. They were definitely in contention late, but they just could not close it out. And the turnovers really killed them in this one. They had 18 turnovers. But otherwise, they were pretty solid. They were 50% from the field, 42% from three, and they significantly out-rebounded the Warriors, 44-30. So the Warriors just shooting the ball slightly more efficiently. They were on fire, 55% from the field, 45% from three. And I think that's going to be a consistent theme going forwards throughout the rest of the playoffs, that incredible shooting, especially from beyond the arc, with, like I said, Curry, Thompson, and Poole leading the way. All right, so we can move on now to the box score, and the Warriors were led by Steph Curry. Off the bench, in 31 minutes, he had 27 points. He was 9 of 17 from the field, 3 of 9 from beyond the arc, and he had 3 rebounds, 6 assists. He did have 4 turnovers, but nonetheless, he will almost certainly be reinserted into the starting lineup at some point. The question is going to be, who does he replace? Do they go with a small lineup to start the game, taking Kevon Looney out of the starting lineup? Because at this point, he's barely playing at all. He played 9 minutes in this game. Or do they take Andrew Wiggins out of the starting lineup, the all-star starter, to keep the Curry, Thompson, Poole trio together? Or do they just switch Poole and Curry and have Poole as their super sub coming off the bench? I don't know what they're going to do. I just want to see what it looks like with Draymond Green, Andrew Wiggins, and then the three scorers. I think that would be an incredible lineup. Now, the question with that would be, can Draymond Green hang with the big centers in the league for an entire game with no help from any other bigs? That is the question that we're not sure about. But, I mean, just from an offensive output, that would just be remarkable. Those three scorers together with Wiggins and Green providing a little bit of defense and facilitation, just incredible stuff for the Warriors. So, in terms of the starting lineup, they were led by Jordan Poole. He had 27 points in 34 minutes. He was 9 of 13 from the field, 3 of 5 from beyond the arc. He was only 6 of 9 from the free throw line, which is interesting because he was the best free throw shooter in the entire NBA this season. And then he also had 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, and 1 block. And then 26 for Klay Thompson. He was very efficient. 10 of 18 from the field, 6 of 13 from 3. So any rust that Thompson had coming back from that long absence seems to be getting shaken off more and more with each passing week. He was very efficient once again in this one, and he had 1 rebound, 1 assist, and 2 blocks as well. And then just 9 points for Andrew Wiggins in 29 minutes. He had 6 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 2 three-pointers. And 6 points for Draymond Green. He had 1 three-pointer, 10 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, and 1 block. And then, like I said, Kevon Looney only played 9 minutes before going out of this game, and he did not score at all in that time. But off the bench for the Warriors, besides Steph Curry, they also got 11 points from Gary Payton II. He was perfect, 4 of 4 from the field, including 3 three-pointers. And then they also got 6 points from Otto Porter Jr., 4 points from Andre Iguodala, and 2 from Nemanja Bjelica. Payton was the only young player to see the court off the bench for the Warriors. Moses Moody, Juan Toscano-Anderson, Jonathan Kuminga, none of them saw the court whatsoever. And as for the Denver Nuggets, they were led by the reigning MVP, Nikola Jokic. He had 37 points and 18 rebounds in 38 minutes, and he was incredibly efficient. 14 of 22 from the field, 2 of 3 from beyond the arc, and 7 of 9 from the free throw line. And he also had 5 assists, 3 steals. Now, he did have 5 turnovers, and just the 5 assists, that's not really what you would expect from Jokic. They're really at their best when he's facilitating, getting like 10, 11 assists. So that's a bit disappointing for him, but it's not exactly like he can do anything about the fact that when he passes his teammates the ball, they just miss their shots. So anyways, incredible stuff nonetheless for Jokic. And then they also got a double-double from Aaron Gordon, 18 points and 12 rebounds. He was 7 of 13 from the field, and he had 4 assists. And then they also got 13 points from Will Barton, although he was just 5 of 13 from the field. He had 5 assists, 4 rebounds. 10 points for Monty Morris. He was also not super efficient, 4 of 11 from the field. He had 2 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals. And Jeff Green, rounding out the starting lineup, was also not very efficient, 1 of 5 from the field. He had 4 points and 2 rebounds. And off the bench for the Nuggets, they didn't get a whole lot of help other than DeMarcus Cousins. He was 3 of 4 from the field in 10 minutes. He had 9 points. And then they also got 6 points from Jamichael Green, 6 points as well from Austin Rivers, and 5 points from Bryn Forbes, 5 from Bones Highland, the rookie, and that was it in terms of the scoring. Facundo Campazzo did not score in his 4 minutes. All right, that will do it for our box score breakdown. We can now move on to our preview for tonight, Friday, April the 22nd. And once again, we have 3 games on in the NBA tonight. We have the Atlanta Hawks taking on the Miami Heat, game 3 of the 1-8 matchup of the Eastern Conference. The Heat have a 2-0 series lead, and they are favored in this game. They are -1.5 in Atlanta. In Chicago, the Bulls are taking on the Milwaukee Bucks, the 3-6 matchup in the Eastern Conference. That one's actually tied 1-1 as the Bulls stole Game 2 in Milwaukee, but the Bucks are still favored in Chicago. They are -2.5. And finally, in the 1-8 matchup of the Western Conference, that series is also tied 1-1, the Pelicans shockingly stealing Game 2 in Phoenix after Devin Booker went down with that injury, and he's going to miss the rest of this series. But with that being said, the Suns are still -2 in New Orleans. So, 3 really intriguing games tonight. All 3 of these games are very small lines, so Vegas predicting some close games once again. We've had a really good playoffs thus far in terms of no blowouts necessarily. I mean, there's been a couple, but for the most part, we've had really close games throughout the playoffs, and we've got 2 1-1 series as well. Surprisingly, I don't think anybody would have predicted the Suns to be 1-1 with the Pelicans at this point, and many people wouldn't have predicted the Bucks to have lost one of their first home games against the Bulls either. So, really good stuff to see some parity in the league right now, and frankly, because of all the parity, I don't really know which way to go on any of these bets. I am not feeling great about any of them. We're going to end up going with one as our best bet, but I could see all these games going either way. So first, in Atlanta, the Hawks, I mean, they've been playing very well against the Heat, despite the fact that they're down 2-0. Trae Young has not been shooting as well as he can, and of course, now that they're without Clint Capella, they do have John Collins back, so I think that the Hawks can definitely win at least one of these 2 games in Atlanta. They could potentially even win them both. I don't know. I mean, the Heat have been playing very well themselves, but Bam Adebayo hasn't really looked like himself either, so I don't know. I just don't think the Heat are going to sweep the Hawks, so I would probably be leaning towards Hawks +2.5, but that one's going to be a stay away from me. In the next game, I would probably also take the underdog, the Bulls, +2.5 at home versus the Milwaukee Bucks, who are reeling now after losing Game 2 and losing Chris Middleton. This could definitely be another upset for the Bulls. Frankly, I'm surprised that they're such, I mean, it's not that big of a line, 2.5, but still, I'm surprised that they're not even favored, or at least like plus one or minus one, because I mean, they looked really good in their last game. DeMar DeRozan was on fire. The Bucks were struggling, and now they're missing one of their leading scorers in Chris Middleton. Now, of course, Giannis can just take over this game, dominate, score like 40, 45 points, and that would change things. But as of right now, I would definitely be leaning towards the Chicago Bulls plus 2.5. But with the Giannis factor looming, I think it's going to be a stay away from me as well. I could see the Bucks evening things out here and winning this one in Chicago. So ultimately, we're just going to go with one best bet for today, and it's going to be that 1-8 matchup in the Western Conference in New Orleans. We're going to actually take the Suns minus 2. Now, the Pelicans have been the plucky underdog story that everyone has been rooting for, and it's been really fun to see the rookies, Jose Alvarado and Trey Murphy and all these guys playing so well. CJ McCollum has really turned this team around. So I love the Pelicans, and I would love to see this story keep going, and I do have faith in them that they could potentially win one of these games in New Orleans and extend this series. But with all that being said, the Suns, even without Devin Booker, have been an incredible team for like two seasons in a row now. They made it to the finals last year. Chris Paul is on an absolute mission to get to the finals again, and I think they will dominate this game, frankly. I think they will rally with no Devin Booker. Cameron Johnson probably going to be inserted into the starting lineup, and you'll recall he had one of the most dominant games of his career this season when Devin Booker went out. So I do think they will probably rally and win this game. But with all that being said, I still have faith in the Pelicans. So I don't feel great about this one, but I'm just kind of picking it because we have to go at least with one best bet. So I'm going to take the Suns minus 2 for our best bet, but I don't feel great about it. And frankly, I wouldn't be that disappointed if the Pelicans did win this one and take an incredible 2-1 series lead. But ultimately, yeah, we're going to take the Suns minus 2. All right, and that will do it for us today. So thank you so much for tuning in. If you'd like to follow the show on social, we are at NBA Recap Pod, or you can just search YouTube or smart speakers for NBA Recap Podcast. We'll be back tomorrow to recap all three of those games and to preview the action for Saturday, April the 23rd. So until then, thanks for tuning in.